Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 314.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we look at the new images of space. And while we're filled with awe, still have no desire to go to Mars. I am your host, Nagin Farsad. And don't get me wrong, the infinite universe is interesting, but like I totally wouldn't want to live there. Today, we're going to talk about Herschel Walker and the many thorns in Biden's side. We'll also talk about the most fascinating speeches in history that were never delivered. And we'll talk about the phenomenon of being a terrible guest. House guest, not podcast guest, because today's panelists are, oh, folks, you have no idea what a star-studded and ridiculous panel we have for you today. Joining us for the very first time, he's just, I had the opportunity to meet him a few weeks ago, and he's so delightful. He's also a former presidential speechwriter. So he's just like the closest person to the president and presidencies in general that we've maybe had on the show. There's maybe a couple people competing for that spot, but I think you win. He's also an author of a new book that's out. We're going to talk all about it. He is the wonderful Jeff Nussbaum. Hey, Jeff.
Hello, Nagin. So good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Oh my God. So excited that you're here. And also joining us on the show again, I mean, this guy has been on the show. You've loved him on the show. You've asked for him to come back on the show, and that's what I'm doing for you here. I am providing you with a man who is a comedian who's just so wonderful. He's a podcast host. He's about to go do a month-long run at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, so people of Scotland who all listen to Fake the Nation, definitely go out and see the wonderful Chris Gethard. Hey, Chris.
Hi. I am also here.
And that's the kind of Chris Gethardian energy that we all yes. Love
the big time energy.
And appreciate.
The notorious big time energy.
Okay, so before we get into it, I just want to remind listeners that if you join Patreon, you get bonus episodes of the show. You can do that at patreon.com/NaginFarsad. For as little as $1, you could just support the show. And then for as little as $4, you start getting free stuff. And then if there's like a $5 level, and then there's like a $10, and then
So, and there's stuff and t-shirts and mugs and oh my gosh. So check out patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. And thank you so much to all the wonderful fans of Fake the Nation. So many of you who have been listening low these many years. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And now let's get into it with topic number one. Okay, so let's start with Herschel Walker. You might know him as an NFL star, but I know him as a really terrible candidate for the U.S. Senate from Georgia running for Raphael Warnock's seat. We can talk about the ways in which I believe he's terrible. But first, I wanted to ask you if you'd heard of this guy before he ran for Senate, because despite my vast sports expertise, I had never heard of him. So where is he on the cultural landscape for maybe a more normal person?
Chris, you want to jump in on that first?
Yeah, I mean, I was born in 1980, so I'm a child of the 80s and 90s, and I can say Herschel Walker was a big deal. He's a name that you knew if you were growing
up. If you were growing up,
even sports adjacent, like he was not an NFL player who was on a squad. He was a star in a big way.
Totally agree. And he won the Heisman Trophy. Yeah. People of a certain age, and Chris and I fit into that relatively wide band. You know the guy. He's got name recognition.
Okay. Wow. This entire piece of cultural history completely flew by me. He did not have name recognition for one Nagin Farsad growing up in Palm Springs, California. Now, that said, you mentioned he has a Heisman Trophy winner. He went to the University of, he also did that at the University of Georgia, so he has particular salience for Georgia. He won the Republican nomination last month with more than 68% of the vote, and he's actually a Trump appointee to the President's Council on Sports, Fitness, and Nutrition from 2018, so he has that little feather in his hat.
And let's be clear, that is a very little feather.
Right. I mean, Jeff, can you just tell us quickly, like, where you came from that maybe you're qualified to talk about the particular feather size?
Sure. When you work in the White House, and I've done this in a couple administrations, there are lots of boards and commissions that presidents get to appoint friends and supporters to. And Donald Trump had a particular attraction to athletes. And so being appointed to the President's Physical Fitness Board means maybe you do like three meetings over the course of 4 years and you get to say you did this.
Now, I
will also say speechwriters love doing research. So I've done a little research and when we get into sort of the substance, and I'm using that word very loosely, of Herschel Walker's agenda here, I should point out that this is a man who went to the University of Georgia, not because of his academic prowess, and then was hit in the head 1,954 times as a running back at Georgia, followed by another 1,000 or so in the NFL, not including blocks. So he went in not particularly as a strong academic, and helmets weren't then what they are now. So he's taken a few hits.
And Jeff just came from the Biden administration, maybe you've heard of it. So and it's just been around presidents since like the year 2000 or something. So you know of what you speak, but I also just want to say, like, when you hear Herschel Walker speak, Chris, I'm going to read you a quote, and then you tell me what you feel about this quote. When asked about climate change, and I believe this video actually went viral, when asked about climate change, he said, "Since we don't control the air, our good air decided to float over to China's bad air. So when China gets our good air, their bad air got to move, so it moves over to our good airspace. Then now we gotta clean up that back up." That's what he said. What did you feel about that assessment?
I see how he got from point A to B on that. No, I don't see at all. That is very rambly. But Herschel Walker, too, if you follow sports, he's always been a little bit of a weirdo, too. And this was a thing that you kind of knew, like.
So this wasn't like a new thing. He's always been not great in interviews.
I don't know about interviews, but what I can tell you is, like, just being, I'm not a huge sports guy, and as far as sports go, I'm mostly a basketball guy, but I grew up knowing Herschel Walker, so things that you knew about Herschel Walker, like, there was a renegade football league called the USFL, which was trying to compete with the NFL, and he played there. He was one of their big marquee gets since he won the Heisman, and he played for the New Jersey Generals, so I'm a Jersey guy, so I always knew him as a kid from that team was owned by Donald Trump. So, like, right there to go with the USFL instead of the NFL at a college, that's a weird choice. He was also on the
weird
Olympic bobsled team while he was a football player. After his football career, he was one of the, you know how you'll see a celebrity from another sport fight mixed martial arts and you're just always like, this is weird. Like, he's one of these guys who's made a series of weirdo choices. So I'm not too shocked to find out that when he opens his mouth, he's kind of a total weirdo.
Okay.
That's where the Trump relationship begins, when he's playing for the Generals. And of course, you know, Donald Trump sort of freezes in his mind who's important somewhere around the mid-1980s. So, you know, Herschel Walker kind of gets locked in there as like an important football player.
And also, I mean, the other reasons besides his position on the environment, he made some claim that he worked for law enforcement. That has been debunked. He made a claim that he had been an FBI agent. That has been debunked. This one's really weird. He talked openly about his son. He has a 22-year-old son who's been very active in his campaign. But then weirdly, and he's been very critical of absentee fathers, and he talks a lot about that issue, and his 22-year-old son talks a lot about that issue. But it also then oddly turns out he has two other children. And I mean, I'm like, you know, this is one of those things where I'm like, we don't know the full story, blah, blah, blah. But it is weird to take a position on absentee fathers when it then turns out, you know, you were forced by court to pay child support. You never acknowledged these other children publicly. It's like, it's not a good look just general. It seems like Oppo research would have been like, we got to handle this one better. You know, that seems to be a big scandal right now.
Yeah. It's like, I'm never going to judge somebody for their family setup, but I will judge the hypocrisy pretty hard.
Yeah.
It's right in line with voting against, you know, voting anti-gay legislation and then being caught cruising in an airport bathroom. It's like right on target with the same, like, say one thing, do another hypocrisy that the Republican Party
I totally agree with Chris. I think it's right. It's like people accept lots of different families, but it's the hypocrisy that's terrible. Although I will say, in having these children sort of revealed publicly, Herschel Walker said, leave my kids alone. And he could have amended that to do what I do and leave my kids alone. I think what we really have here, thinking broadly, is like, this is going to be a test case of how powerful is the two drug cocktail of celebrity and partisanship.
That's
right?
Because, the question.
Because this is a woefully underqualified candidate to be senator, you know, even a sort of dangerous one in terms of just like beliefs and ignorance and all that stuff. And so it's like, is partisanship and celebrity worship going to be strong enough to pull this guy, to get this guy a win, and not just a win, but a win against one of the most impressive new senators in the Senate, Reverend Raphael Warnock, who is an inspiration.
He's not unpopular either, right? Like, he's won over a lot of hearts and minds in that job. So it is a really interesting race, a really interesting person to put pit against Raphael Warnock. I should also mention Raphael Warnock has child custody issues that he's admitted to publicly. It's like, you know, whatever. I just want to say, like, I'm not to be like, everyone's perfect. No one's perfect. Okay. So this is a really weird race. We're going to keep our eyes on it. I do want to just point out to listeners in Georgia, I do think Herschel Walker is totally unfit for the job. So, you know, obviously listeners of Fake the Nation, they're wild conservatives. And so they are really like weighing that option. Okay. Let's talk about Biden now. This is interesting because because last week he had some very bad but also kind of neutral information come out. The Bureau of Labor Statistics revealed inflation had grown by 9.1% over the past year. His job rating fell to 36%. His economic handling dropped to 30%. Both of those numbers are lower than Obama or Trump ever had. Joe Manchin was a dick once again, saying he wouldn't support any action on climate, which is not technically Biden's fault, but you know, it means that his climate agenda can't move forward right now. And then 64% of people said that they would nominate someone else for 2024 instead of Biden. But then in a head-to-head race, 92% of Democrats said that they would vote for him over the GOP nominee. So it is a mixed bag of stuff that he had to deal with. It's not great. Or is it normal? I don't know. I mean, you know, Jeff, you've had more experience working around the presidency and for presidents and thinking about presidents. Like, how much of this is just, like, news? How much of this is just ridiculous thing to be talking about? It's 2022, and we're, like, 2 years away from voting for someone.
Yeah, well, we're 2 years away from voting for president, but, you know, obviously Congress is up for grabs. But this kind of illustrates two things. Your last site that, like, you know, his numbers are not where they should be or could be, and yet people would still vote for him in head for head, it sort of bears out the political truism from the former mayor of Boston, Kevin White, who I have a chapter on in my book, who famously said, "Don't compare me to the Almighty, compare me to the alternative," right? So you're always going to do better in a race against an alternative than you are against A, either the Almighty, or B, running against yourself. So that's kind of why once a choice is presented, as opposed to an abstract, you see Biden's numbers start to rise. But in terms of just what he's facing, again, this is a challenge because we just have such short attention spans. Like, President Biden is confronted with, you know, a land war in Asia for the first time in 80 years, you know, a once in a century pandemic, these massive supply chain disruptions, and really 40 years of crumbling infrastructure, which slows down supply chains, which is in part responsible for inflation, and 40 years of workers' wages being kind of suppressed and repressed. So here he comes in and you know, with a Recovery Act bill, tries to get some money in people's pockets, with an infrastructure bill, tries to start fixing ports and bridges and roads. But the pandemic really scrambled stuff. So he's sort of slogging through, just trying to put his head down and fix it. And American voters and global voters are like, okay, but what about now? Okay, but what about now? Like, I'm okay. Right. I'm okay with supporting the people of Ukraine for a week, but am I okay with supporting them for 6 months by paying higher gas prices? So he's getting stuff done. He's getting substantial stuff done, but it's hard for people to take a step back, understandably, from their own lives, because when you see what's happening with food prices, it's hard to take a step back from your own life and say, but the president's doing a really good job, although I think he's doing as good a job as could be hoped for under the circumstances, and could use probably a little help from Joe Manchin and maybe even a Republican.
Chris, you're among friends.
Yeah.
Tell us how you really feel. Are you at this point in the Biden presidency? Where are your feelings?
Well, just to lay out who I am, like, I'm a dad in the suburbs of New Jersey. I'm actually in Mikey Sherrill's district. So for people who follow politics, you know, she is like a moderate Democrat who flipped a historically red district. So I'm around a lot. I'm a pretty progressive guy who's around a lot of people who kind of straddle the line, like more of the Reagan Republicans who didn't like Trump. That's my headspace. That's my environment. These are who I'm raising my kid around. And I can say, like, it's really hard because I fundamentally like Joe Biden. I really do. I think he's a good man. I think there's also some things he's done that went poorly that were hard choices. Like, you see the footage of what happened when he took the troops out of Afghanistan. And it's like, yeah, it was such a shit show. But I have a feeling history might look back and go, someone was going to have to end that. And he did an incredibly hard thing, maybe not the smoothest way, but
like he took one for the team or whatever.
Like, yeah, someone was gonna have to just like rip that band-aid off and we're gonna have to deal with the pain of it, and he did it. And there's a part of me that admires him, even though it was such a fiasco. And I see the pandemic, and I see the obstructionism
as a suburban person? Are you like, are you prices at the pump guy?
Well, I was just going to say,
really
like,
pissed off.
There's the part of me that sees all of it for the historical context as someone who wants to be well read and someone who likes him and someone who votes blue. And then there's also a part of me that goes, I just filled my gas tank and it was $80, and that's insane. And people can't get baby formula, and it might not be the best time to see a picture of him like fist bumping the guy from Saudi Arabia. Like, that's kind of a bonehead move. You know what I mean? Like, if my tank is $80 and you're fist bumping a guy who probably ordered the killing of an American journalist, like, it's hard for me to feel inspired, especially when you couple it with all the other stuff that you saw such online reaction to that I totally understood of. I can't be told to vote anymore. I can't be asked to donate every time the Republicans do awful things, when it's like we were so excited that Warnock and his hot friend John from Georgia got it. Like, you supposedly have the majority. So it's like this idea of like vote and we can get change done. It's like we did. Like, you have all the majorities.
No, but I, like,
it's tough. It's tough not to think that way.
I totally see that.
Just stop asking me for money and stop telling me to vote when I'm a dad who's scared to hear that you can't get baby formula in this country. My son's older than that, but it was not far. That was not long ago for me to have needed that.
I first of all, I agree with everything you said. And it's also, it's like, right, you get those emails. You're like, I did give money. I did vote. And you have power. So use it. And it's interesting because this is a place where Democrats are really weak, which is there's a story to be told here on baby formula, right? It's a company that bought back shares and gave people bonuses, you know, and didn't invest in its workers and its plants. But I absolutely take your point. And where you are in New Jersey, like, think about the members of Congress, Tom Malinowski, Andy Kim, Josh Gottheimer, Mickey Sherrill. Like, these are kind of the sort of smart, centrist, wonderful people who we really need to keep in Congress. And the fact that some of them are at risk now is really scary.
I'm really scared to live in it. I have a very interesting path where I moved from Jackson Heights, Queens, where I was there when the AOC toppling of Joe Crowley happened. So I saw what it was like to live in that. And then I moved to Mikey Sherrill's district, which is, you know, it's like a 45-minute drive, but it's just such a different ball game. So I've kind of lived on both ends of it. And I also want to say too, for anybody listening, I am a proudly progressive artist with roots in the New York City art scene. And if you look up my bona fides, one of the weirder artists of my generation. Like, I'm a weird artist. So is my wife.
You're really fucking weird.
Always
and
have
I will vouch for that 100%. But, yeah. But that doesn't mean you don't get to be mad about a gas price. Okay. That's all. Both of those things can be true. And that's the other thing is I think, and on this show, I've said this a million times, you can be a progressive like I am, who still believes that there needs to be like a responsible handling of like the police department, right? Like, yeah. It's like, I'm not out here trying to cut budgets just without a plan. You know what I mean? So like that, you can be a progressive and like have nuanced positions like that. That's okay. Like, it's like this, we're in this weird position as progressives where I have to be like, no, but I'm still like really weird and cool. Like, even though I know, I really wish gas prices were lower. You know what I mean? All of those things can be true.
Yeah. I just want to say too, it's so tough to see like a fist bump with that guy when I'm
so
like,
you
why
know,
aren't
so you
just
know the backstory? The then.
No, I don't. And maybe that's the problem is like, so, they, well, no, they
is
define
it, is
the story.
NBS
story.
Had arthritis and then Biden was trying to help him. And there's like almost before
the trip, the White House put out, and I say my former colleague said that because of COVID concerns, the president wouldn't be shaking hands. He would only be doing fist bumps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then immediately 2 minutes in, he forgets his own guidance and then shakes hands of the Israelis. And so I agree. Like, I think it's much, much better optics to say, look, I shook his hand. Protocol demanded it. A fist bump says you're my buddy. Right.
Yeah.
A handshake kind of says I had to do it.
And this is a formal affair. Yeah.
So I agree. Totally. The best thing would be that stuff.
We have to move on, but folks, let me know how you're feeling, and I know we shouldn't tell you to vote, but I still think we should all just think about voting and talk about voting. And so I know that's maybe that's annoying, but it isn't annoying because you know it. But the people who don't know it are your neighbors, and that's who you where we need to be spreading that.
Especially in the midterms, because
they're the less glamorous, boring election, but they're like the as important.
If the midterm electorate looked like the presidential electorate in any of the midterm elections, we would have the Supreme Court justices, we would have, right, you know, we would have the judges, we would have progress on climate change, we would be in much, much better place.
All right. So definitely remember, we all know, these guys know. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and hear about our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to talk about other things.
I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we are back. And before we get into topic number two, I want to quickly get into some races to watch from Chris in Missouri. The Democrat Spencer Yoder is running for Missouri's own Senate seat against some racists to watch. Mark McCloskey and wife, oddly, they actually come into this guy's bar, which I thought was really of like a odd, funny detail. And then also out of Minnesota, the second congressional district is in Dakota County. Incumbent Rep. Angie Craig, a Democrat, defeated Tyler Kistner by less than 10,000 votes in 2020, and she is up against Kistner again, and also up against the legal marijuana now candidate Paula Overby. So there's a third party situation also going on here. So folks, in Minnesota's second congressional district, please look at Angie Craig. All right, let's get into topic number two. Jeffrey, Jeff, I keep calling you, but like your grandfather would.
I respond to both. Yeah. All right. I'm good.
You just released a book called Undelivered, The Never Heard Speeches That Would Have Rewritten History. I got my grubby hands on this book, and it is so fascinating. Among the speeches that were written but not delivered were a JFK speech for if the Cuban Missile Crisis had gone a different way. And, of course, the one I read just immediately went to from the table of contents was Hillary Clinton's acceptance speech chapter. But before we get into it, tell me, like, why you started this, because I feel like the whole backstory of you even wanting to write this book is interesting.
Yeah, so I was like a kid speechwriter for Al Gore in 2000, and election night 2000 comes, and Gore has three speeches prepared: a victory, a concession, and then a weirdly, we thought he might win the Electoral College and lose the popular vote. So there was sort of a modified version that was like, look, an Electoral College win is still a win, which we were explaining to Americans before Americans now realize painfully in many cases that an Electoral College win is indeed a win. So Gore ends up giving no speech that night. You know, Florida's too close to call. And those speeches go undelivered and in fact get lost. Like, I was holding them at one point. I can't find them. But it started this obsession of saying, like, where are the other places in history, not just in politics, you know, war and peace, even cultural events and things like this, where the outcome is so in doubt that there's a speech prepared, there's a draft prepared for an alternate outcome. And so that's what this book is. You know, I found about 20 of them. Helen Keller speaking women's suffrage, Emperor Hirohito trying to apologize for World War II, King Edward trying to stay on the throne and marry Wallace Simpson. So I've in each chapter, I kind of recreate these less known or unknown chapters in history and then share the speech that shows kind of what the alternative outcome would have looked like.
And it's fantastic. And just the breadth of speeches in there. And I wanted to ask you about, you know, in Hillary Clinton's speech, you talked about Jimmy Carter's basic outline for a concession speech, which I felt like was just a great life rule, is how to handle being wrong and losing and failing or just getting something wrong, you know? Talk to us about Jimmy Carter's, like, basic outline for concessions.
You know, Jimmy Carter comes in for, like, more references than I thought in this book. But basically, it's actually from Rick Hertzberg, who was a speechwriter for Jimmy Carter, and basically said, like, every concession speech has eight things. You know, a manful, rueful acknowledgement of the pain of defeat, a congratulations to the victor, a pledge, sometimes made over the shouted protests of the audience, to close ranks behind the people's choice, thank you to supporters, praise for the political system, an assertion that what unites us as Americans is more important than what divides us, and a pledge to carry on the cause to which the campaign was allegedly devoted, and a bit of concluding graciousness. So those are kind of traditionally been the ingredients of a concession speech. But strangely enough, in 2016, Hillary kind of had a draft that did that. But once it became clear she'd have to give a concession speech, it was clear that those eight elements were totally insufficient to the shock and pain and outrage and the reality of the campaign that had just concluded. And so she certainly dispensed with some of them. And an interesting sort of gender note here, she is the only person to ever say in a concession speech, "I'm sorry," which seems interesting.
I thought that detail was really interesting. Another speech that I was like, didn't realize was your chapter on Condoleezza Rice. She was really obsessed. Did you know this, Chris? That Condi was gonna give a speech on 9/11. This little piece of history just completely bypassed me. He was gonna give a speech on 9/11 about the threat of intercontinental ballistic missiles. Do I have that right, Jeff?
You have that 100% right.
Yeah, she was obsessed with it, right? Like, she was all about it. And hilariously, Biden was like, I'm sorry, like, I think Condi's mistaken. Like, they were on the talk show circuits, like, Biden being like, I don't think that's right. Like, I think they're going to come in a different way. Like, Biden actually oddly had a lot of insight at that time. He was the chairman of the Foreign Intelligence Committee. Is that right?
Foreign Relations. Yeah.
Foreign Relations. So, sorry, Chris, you were going to say?
I did not know this. And this is, it's like the real life Marvel multiverse. Like, you're presenting us with all the other what if scenarios of how history could have gone.
Totally. Yeah,
I had, that's how I've been selling this. Or actually, you're teaching me how to sell the book. That's what I should
be
saying.
There you go. The political multiverse.
The political multiverse of madness.
I mean, did Condi, in a situation like that, was she ever like, I was so wrong, guys. So sorry. Like, you know what I mean?
Not even for a minute. And by the way, there's some new, and by the way, there's some new evidence. And this pains me to say it because we have a couple chapters on apologies in the book. Eisenhower has a speech apologizing for the D-Day failure. Emperor Hirohito tries to apologize for World War II, which we would not let him deliver. But there's some evidence now that you should never apologize. The science basically says if you apologize, you demoralize your supporters and you embolden your detractors. And so,
what?
Yeah. So,
wait, there's real science on this? It's funny because I hate that science.
This is actually from Cass Sunstein at Harvard, who worked in the Obama administration. This is not like totally established, but there is some evidence that says never apologize. And I hate it. I hate it because I think.
Is this the rare moment that Trump read a Harvard study and then operated that way?
Yeah, totally.
Did he actually read something? Is that what's happening right now?
The guy, when he's behind closed doors, he has elbows deep in sociology journals.
So I'm just going with the science here, guys. I'm a big believer in science, it turns out.
So, but Trump, right? Trump had, like, he's a lunatic savant. There is an element where he kind of got stuff on a deeper level. And he recognized that the combination of short attention spans and not wanting to ever demoralize your own supporters. I mean, he got it. I mean, he got right. I'm making air quotes for the listeners. Like, he got it right in that sense. But yeah, and to your point about Condi Rice, yes, she was obsessed with missile defense. And in the speech she was planning on giving on September 11th, she even had the line that was basically like, look, some people think a more secure nation just means, you know, doing a better job at the airport metal detectors. So, I mean, that speech looks like the goal of the book is not to have any gotchas. But that speech remains under classification for longer than it needs to, I think in part because it does not look, that one has not aged well.
Right. Like that was so crazy to me when I read about that. Just to close us out here, what is your favorite speech that went undelivered?
So I have two that kind of are on the same theme. The last chapter has like four speeches people were working on at the time they died. Einstein, John F. Kennedy, FDR, Pope Pius XI. And Kennedy's speech, his final speech, basically people, to the extent people remember it, they remember it as being like America's the watchman on the walls of world freedom. But what they don't see is there's lots of language in here where he's talking about domestic extremism and misinformation. And he's basically saying misinformation can hobble the progress of a country. And similarly, there's an obscure one from John Altgeld, who was governor of Illinois, who pardoned the Haymarket rioters and lost office because of it, who's basically denied the opportunity to give his farewell address, where he's talking about the dangers of partisanship over the need to govern. And so those two feel like tremendously relevant
really
warnings
prescient.
To us today. Yeah.
Okay. I honestly think this book is so fascinating, and just to revisit these points in history, to think about what they were going to say. It's just fascinating. I highly recommend it.
Well, thank you. And did we tell your listeners it's called Undelivered? It's called Undelivered.
Undelivered. So pick it up. It is available everywhere where books are sold. All right, let us move on to topic number three. So we read a question in the social cues column in the Times, and here's what that question said. I let friends stay at my lake house for a long weekend while I was away. I returned to six loads of dirty laundry, furniture moved all over the place, and a pile of water toys in my shed without so much as a thank you note for letting them stay. I was upset and let them know about it. Not only did they fail to apologize, they criticized my reaction and questioned the amount of laundry they had actually left. I feel gaslit. These people are like family to me, but I'm not sure I can forgive them. Their response to my complaint was worse than the original inconsiderate behavior. What can I do? So before we get into what Philip Galanes at the Times recommended they do, Chris, What would you do? What should they do in this situation? And do you think that those guests were actually bad guests?
I mean, it's hard to say if you're... There is definitely a part of me that grew up in North Jersey that's like, as soon as you start saying, like, I had people mess up my lake house, where there is a part of me going, you got a lake house. Like, how much am I going to trust your complaints on this? But if I do take it at face value, it sounds like these were rude people. And it sounds like it's fair to hold them at arm's length or not have them back unsupervised. But definitely reading between the lines there is a part of me that's like, what are these rich people so mad about? But that is that also probably is just on me.
Wait, so, Chris, what is your personal, like, when you are a house guest somewhere, what is your, like, your set of ethics around it? How do you behave?
Well, I grew up Irish Catholic, so I apologize a lot for things.
Nice.
I endlessly thank people for things. Mm-hmm. As you get older, you learn, hey, you stripped the sheets off the bed you slept in, right? You find the nearest hamper, you leave the pillowcase and then the sheets in there. You always offer to take the people out to dinner, especially if this is not an Airbnb. These are like your actual friends, you know?
Yeah.
You always look to do something nice.
Yeah, you
offer
to pay for the house cleaner.
There you go.
Have a cleaner come. Yeah.
You look to go above and beyond on some level. So, I mean, stripping the sheets is like the minimum. Like, you're a grown-up and a guest in somebody else's house. So that's the thing. Was it six sets of sheets that they had kindly stripped for you?
I had the same question. I was like, is the laundry just the sheets that they stripped? And there's like a misunderstanding here.
Are they taking all the towels that would have been hanging on hooks and putting them in the lawn? Is that one of the big piles? That's actually rather considerate, if you ask me.
Right. Okay. So there are some, what about these? Yeah. Jeff, where are you at with this, with this complaint?
So my relatively recent life mantra is clarity is kindness. And I think, like, you know, I think the person who had offered up their house, like, I think they won't feel complete until they say, hey, this upset me. Right. Like, but I also think probably a little front end clarity is going to help in the future, which is, hey, when you leave the house, please do X, Y, and Z. But now seeing that, I'm like, I'm just hoping for this homeowner that, like, they left their Netflix logged in and the homeowner can have some fun just screwing with their algorithms, you know, just like just choosing to watch some really weird stuff just so that messes with them a little bit. But I read it the same way, Chris. I was like, A, this is a really high class problem. We should all be so lucky to have people mess up our second homes. But
just in defense of this person, I've never said anything, but we've had these friends who come over for dinner every once in a while and they never bring anything, and it's fine. Obviously, like, you don't have to bring anything. But if I'm invited to someone's house for dinner, I'm like you, Chris. I'm like, I'm so sorry I exist. Here are 15 gifts for you. I apologize for walking through the door. You know what I mean? Like, how can I help? It's like, I'm so constantly apologizing for my existence. And that's also not good. But it's just, I go overboard. And so it's weird for me. We just had these friends. They like literally never bring a single item with them. Like flowers or what? I don't care. I mean, it's like, I don't need them to bring anything, but I also just think it's a weird, like, didn't your mom tell you that that's the nice thing to do when you go to someone's house to, like, take something? Where, you know what I mean?
I love that we are all wired for guilt here, right? Like, I walk into a house, I'm so sorry I'm here. I'm so sorry I even showed up. Here's some wine. Here's some flowers. Should I take off my shoes? I'm so sorry my socks are ugly. Like, I mean, it's like over and over. Right?
I've also I have a historically bad house guest situation coming to mind right now. So I do see the side. Like, if this is all real and I'm not just reading between the lines too much on the lake house thing, like, I did once have someone... It's a very awkward situation where I won't get into the specifics so as to not totally out this person, but there was someone who my wife and I knew not that well, but who had done something, had been a part of something pretty meaningful, and he traveled very far and needed a place to stay in New York, but he presented it as like, I just need a place to crash and I'm going to be out early. And I got up and went to work. And this was, we were in a one bedroom apartment. It was before a kid was born, but a one bedroom apartment, a fold out couch in the living room. And when I came home at four, he was still sitting. He was sitting up shirtless in our fold out bed on his phone while my wife was vacuuming around the outside of the bed. And I was in like a, like the rage thermometer like went so quickly to the top that it broke and the mercury spilled over, you know, like I wasn't even filled with rage, because it was like, this level of anger is so confusing. Like, it's four in the afternoon, you're still shirtless, and my wife is just cleaning around you while you ignore her. So I've seen bad house guest stuff. Like, I'm not doubting that that is a real thing that exists.
That is so, I do think that's so bad. Well, I'll tell you what the writer said to this particular, the columnist said about this. They said, if these people, he really pinpointed on the phrase, these people are like family to me. And if you're saying that, like, you shouldn't take it lightly, he wrote, so assuming your friends normally enrich your life, give them some time to recognize their mistake and circle back to you with a sincere apology. You know, if they are your dear friends, you have to kind of give them a chance to realize what they've done and to give them a moment to step back, or give them a couple of weeks and then gently raise the issue again. Now, it's interesting because my way of dealing with things would be not to deal with them. And so, like, to give them 2 weeks and then go back, like, the idea just gives me hives. But, and it's interesting. I think one of the things that that struck me, though, about this advice is that when people are, like, family to you, like, these friends that come over and don't bring us anything, it's like, my husband has known them for so, so many years. The point I got to was, I just need to accept them and then just be okay with how they behave. Because this is ultimately not important, right? And they're not the best guests. And that is part of who they are. But it's like, do I still love them anyway? Yes, then okay. You know what I mean? If it was going to really needle me forever, I maybe would say something. But there is something about acceptance, right? I don't know, that I think is also helpful here.
Yeah, but there's also something about the weird satisfaction that comes from holding on to a grievance. Like, at this point, you almost don't want them to show up with wine and flowers, because then you lose that really satisfying grievance that they never
do. Right. No, but there's that weird, you know, and now it is an ongoing joke of like, oh, let's invite them over so that we have to do all of the work and they don't even help us clean. You know, they bring us nothing. Like, it's like it is now a joke. I do have, like, reveries about them showing up with something and being like, so sorry for these many, many times when we have, like, not reciprocated this, you know?
If they did turn it around at this point, you'd almost probably feel bad, right? I'd almost instinctively be like, oh, I must have sent a signal of such dismay.
Or you know they're listening to the podcast.
Oh, or they're listening to, like, yeah, and they're like, wait a second, is that us? Because come to think of it, we've never taken anything over there. Okay, well, folks, let me know, what is your experience with guests? By the way, and I wanted to say one last thing, which is that I remember being in France. Listeners know I have some experience there. I was in France. My aunt was a refugee in France, and she made friends and with this other family. Her family made friends with this other family, and they invited her to this, like, country home or whatever, and I went and I went with them to this country home, and it was very much like, oh, everybody cooks together and cleans together and all this stuff. In Iranian culture, when you're a guest, you do not, like, lift a finger. Like, you all constantly offer, and then the guest is like, no, you sit. The host is like, no, you sit, I've got it, you sit. So in Iranian culture, my aunt was like, oh, this is weird. I'm just like cooking with her. And I'm like, oh, no, that's not weird. Like, that's really normal. We're all here on a weekend and you're cooking with her. So the other thing is sometimes I want to point out cultural differences that, you know, may come into play. So keep those in mind for all your lovely Iranian friends out there. Okay, let me know what you think. Do you have any bad guest stories? Did you ever confront them? Did you ever do anything about it? So curious. Folks, that is the end of the show. Ah, Chris, Jeff, you guys are just so gosh darn delightful. This was a really fun time talking to you guys. What I would really love is for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the wonderful things that you do. Jeff Nussbaum, where do they follow you?
Twitter at Jeffrey Nussbaum, or just look at jeffreynussbaum.com and you can find where I'll be talking about books and all sorts of other stuff.
And remind them of the title of your book that is now available.
The book is Undelivered, The Never Heard Speeches That Would Have Rewritten History. Buy it anywhere, but especially buy it from a local bookstore and support local businesses.
Excellent. And I'm in it. I'm in this book. I'm really enjoying it. So I highly recommend. Chris Gethard, where do people find you?
Well, you can find all my tour dates at chrisgeth.com and Chris Geth on Instagram and Chris Gethard on Twitter. And I got the Beautiful Anonymous podcast and the New Jersey is the World podcast. And I'm around. I'm doing stuff.
Folks, you've heard me talk about the Beautiful Anonymous podcast before. It is actually quite beautiful and just riveting. And if you're anywhere near a live show of Chris Gethard's, you should be immediately attending it, because that is a wonderful, wonderful time. And as for me, you know where to find me and all the things that I do. I want to remind folks that I will be on the Pod Save America tour dates in Seattle on Thursday. So this show drops Thursday morning. So Thursday night, I'm going to be in Seattle. I believe you can still get tickets, maybe. And then on Saturday, I'm going to be in Portland. So again, go to Pod Save America to find out all of the details about Portland and Seattle. I will be there this weekend. It'll be so great to see Fake the Nation listeners in the wild, as it always is. But don't worry, I will have many, many more dates coming up in the fall. So there'll be other opportunities to see me. And I would really like to thank all the people that make this show a possibility. That's our wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire, our fantastic audio engineer, Stephanie Aguilar, all of the fantastic people at HeadGum that make this show possible. Our theme music was written by Gabi Alter. And don't forget, if you want to send us an email, you can send an email at fakethenation@headgum.com. Again, that's fakethenation@headgum.com. Please keep sending your races to watch. Please keep sending your... we have a couple of segment ideas that I want to get into from listeners. So keep those coming. And again, you can also support the show at patreon.com/NagineFarsad, and we will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.